A public policy polling based out of Raleigh just came out with a new survey on the Affordable Care Act for an organization called Protect Our Care. Also, kind of a wider reaching survey of voters nationwide about what they think of health care in general. Joined now on the phone by Tom Jensen, the director of public policy polling. Publicpolicypolling.com is their website, to break down these numbers and also to talk a little bit more locally about the possible effect of the two bills that have been passed this week by the General Assembly in special session, if in fact procedurally they do go through. Tom Jensen joins us now on the phone. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron. Good to be with you.
So let's start with the new survey for Protect Our Care, mostly focused on health care. And I know we've had the conversation a number of times where you've said health care is kind of the issue that is galvanizing voters, and particularly voters on the left, and kind of moving the dial over to the left a little bit more in 2017 and 2018. Same numbers here, or is there any change as far as that goes?
Well, I thought one thing that was particularly interesting in this survey was we asked people whether they want Congress to keep the Affordable Care Act or repeal it. 59% said that we should keep the Affordable Care Act and make fixes to it as necessary. Only 34% said we should repeal it and start over with a new health care law. Those numbers are pretty consistent with what we've seen throughout the entire year. But I think the question we asked on this poll that was maybe the most interesting was, if the candidates for Congress in your district were a Democrat who supports the Affordable Care Act and a Republican who wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act, who would you vote for? And when you use that frame based on people's position on the Affordable Care Act, the Democrat who would keep the Affordable Care Act leads the Republican who would repeal it 56-40, a 16-point margin. And Democrats in general have been doing well on generic ballot polls lately. Quinnipiac had a poll this week, I think, with Democrats up 13 on the generic ballot for Congress. And the polling averages have Democrats up by about 10 points on the generic ballot for Congress. So it's a good metric for Democrats by sort of any measure right now. But it's interesting that when you particularly ask about that in a healthcare frame, the lead for Democrats goes all the way up to 16 points. We've been talking all year, really all the last 2 years, about how this is the most potent issue for Democrats right now. And I think that these numbers just go to sort of further reinforce that.
And are we talking likely voters here or registered voters on this survey?
This is registered voters, and one thing that's sort of interesting about this political climate, usually in a midterm election, you would think of registered voters as being the better number for Democrats and likely voters tending to be better for Republicans. So if you went to a likely voter poll, it wouldn't be as good for Democrats. This cycle, it's sort of a different picture because Democrats are so fired up. I think we're seeing a lot of polls where among likely voters, Democrats do better than Republicans compared to the registered voters polls, which is an unusual dynamic for a midterm.
But ultimately, it kind of comes down to the same advice, which is if you're the Democrats or if you're a Democratic candidate who's running for office, you really want to hit that health care issue and talk about how the Affordable Care Act has been under fire in the last year, and vote for Democrats and we'll keep your health care, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we also asked people which party who do you trust more on health care, the Republicans and President Trump or Democrats? And Democrats went out on that by a 55-42 margin. So, you know, the country is closely divided, but health care is one issue where the country is not as closely divided, with Democrats really sort of having an upper hand there.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, again, publicpolicypolling.com is the website. You can also find him on Twitter, and more numbers from this survey at PPP Polls. So one thing that I've been kind of curious about, and this kind of came out again in this particular survey, is you've asked the two-way distinction between, do you want to keep the Affordable Care Act and fix what's wrong or flawed with it versus repealing the Affordable Care Act altogether? What do the numbers look like, do we know, if we add the third option of going beyond the Affordable Care Act and adding single payer or Medicare for All or something like that as an option, as a lot of people on the left are talking this year?
Yeah, we haven't been asking specifically about that on these polls, but one thing that definitely has been true over the years is that, especially when the Affordable Care Act polled as an unpopular piece of legislation, part of the reason it polled as an unpopular piece of legislation was because there were 10 or 15% of voters who really just didn't think it went far enough in addressing health care issues. So they actually opposed it from the left rather than opposing it from the right. So there's definitely, I think, a lot of sentiment out there that we could do something even bolder than the Affordable Care Act. But with the current sort of balance of power in Washington, D.C., I think for now what most Democratic leaders are focused on is keeping what we have for the time being. And then I think a thought that hopefully Democrats will get back in control sometime in the near future. And then I think you'll see further steps forward on health care from where we are now.
Again, you can get more information on this survey if you're listening and you want more at PPP Polls on Twitter. You can get the full numbers there. Speaking with Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling, and Tom, let's turn the attention now to the state level, because we've talked about the upcoming 2018 midterms on the state level as well. We got the state Supreme Court race, races for every single seat in the General Assembly, but the General Assembly just met in special session and passed a couple of bills, one of them addressing what's going to be on the ballot in terms of explaining those six state constitutional amendments that are going to be there, but the other one very directly targeting and affecting the state Supreme Court race between Barbara Jackson, the Republican, Anita Earls, the Democrat, and then Chris Anglin, that third candidate who ran as a Republican but may have its party affiliation taken off the ballot if this bill that passed goes through. What do you think is going to be the impact on the outcome of elections, if any, from these two bills, assuming they go through?
Well, I think the outcome from Anglin not being able to run with his Republican label is that he'll basically become a wash instead of being something that would be an advantage to Democrats. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, and I felt like even without Anglin on the ballot, in this political climate, Anita Earls was already a 60% chance of winning, sort of the favorite to get this in the Democratic column. I felt like having two Republicans and Anita Earls put that winning percentage for Democrats more up in the 80% range. If Anglin has to run as an unaffiliated or ends up deciding not to run at all, I think that puts it back into the 60% range, but I don't think it sort of changes what the contours of the race would have been a month ago before Anglin even got into the picture. So I think it's kind of a wash in terms of where we were a month ago. It hurts Democrats a little bit compared to if Anglin had run too, but I really think that Anglin was probably only going to get 3 or 4% of the vote in a close race. Certainly that could have flipped it to Anita Earls. But I still think she has a very good chance of winning anyway, given how things are going for Democrats across the country.
Do we know where voters stand yet on those six constitutional amendments?
Well, the voter ID amendment is going to start out pretty popular. We've always found voters supporting that by 30 to 35 points. But I will say that one of the most interesting things that we've seen happen over the course of the time we've been polling is in 2012, we were really involved in polling on a voter ID amendment in Minnesota, and it started out ahead 30, 35 points in the polls, just like in North Carolina. And the more voters learned about it over the course of that campaign, and the more of a sort of public dialogue there was about the issue, it got less popular and less popular and less popular, and it actually ended up failing on election night by about 5 points after starting ahead by 30 or 35 points, just like in North Carolina. So voter ID is definitely something that to voters off of the top of their heads, I think it sounds pretty reasonable. But we've definitely seen that the numbers can move south if there's more of a public dialogue about it. And it'll be interesting to see if that happens in North Carolina like it happened in Minnesota. I think some of the other constitutional amendments are just very confusing to voters at this point. We've done some initial work looking at how people feel about capping the income tax, how they feel about changing the setup of the Board of Elections and those sorts of things. We actually find more voters saying not sure on both of those amendments than we do saying that they're either for or against them. They just don't understand them at this point. So I think in that context, it's smart of Democrats to run with this nix all six messaging, because it just makes it a lot easier to just tell people to vote against everything than it does to try to ferret out, well, this one's not so bad, and I mean, other than voter ID, I think voters are sort of confused about what all these issues are, especially in the summer when they're not really thinking about it yet. So there's a lot of room for public education to sort of sway what happens with those one way or another.
And that actually raises another important question just about these kind of referendums in general, which is as much of a voter education campaign as gets launched and carried out between now and Election Day, there are going to be a lot of voters who go to the polls on Election Day and they look at these constitutional amendments and they're still going to be confused as to what they are, what to do, what they do, what's in them, what's not in them, what the current law is, and how it actually is going to make a difference. So I don't know if we know the answer to this question, but when voters go to the polls and they look at a referendum and they are confused as to what it does that make them more likely to say yes or no, or does it matter?
It makes them more likely to say no or to not vote on it at all. Something that's sort of a rule of thumb with amendments is that your yes vote in a poll is as good as you're going to do. So let's say that you're polling some amendment and it's up 49 to 41. You often feel like you're in pretty decent chance of having that fail, even if you're up 49 to 41, because people are a lot more likely, if they don't know anything about something, to just vote no than they are yes. You figure status quo is safer than a change. One thing that I think is going to be very important on these constitutional amendments is grassroots mobilization. I say this in all seriousness, like if some of these fail by narrow margins, it might be because the Orange County Democratic Party did a good job of making sure there were volunteers at every early voting site and every polling site on Election Day, handing out the party materials saying to just vote no on everything, because for a lot of voters, that might be the only thing they know. So I think that that's something where it could play to Democrats' advantage in trying to kill these amendments, because I think they have a stronger volunteer base for this year. But stuff like working the polls doesn't matter at all for who people are going to vote for president, who people are going to vote for governor, stuff like that. Nobody shows up not knowing how they're going to vote for president or governor and be swayed by somebody handing them a piece of literature at the polls. But something like these constitutional amendments, it really can make a big difference. So it'll be interesting to see the extent to which that's a real factor in what happens this fall.
Speaking again with Tom Jensen. And Tom, before we let you go, one more question about that special session. And this is not to do with the content of the bill, but the procedure by which they passed. I know when I was following and kind of covering minute by minute the special session as it was happening, I personally, just as a North Carolinian, was getting really upset by it, not because of the content of the bills, because the bills themselves are pretty innocuous. There's not going to be a caption on the amendments versus there is going to be a caption, or someone who changes their party affiliation at the last possible second in order to game the system isn't going to have their party affiliation listed. And like, neither of those bills are all that egregious. It was the procedure of, Republicans tried to game the system earlier and passed a bunch of bills and it didn't work out for them. So now they're having a special session to try to re-rig the system in their favor. That really got me upset. But I'm a political nerd, and so are you. So what do North Carolinians in general, or voters in general, think about that? Are procedural issues like that enough to galvanize voters to care about something that's otherwise kind of innocuous?
I don't think they matter, and I think that's why Republicans get away with doing the stuff they do. I mean, the last time I can remember us all being really infuriated about Republicans playing games was the week before Christmas in 2016, when they went into a special session knowing that Cooper was going to become governor and took away a bunch of the governor's powers because of that. And it was outrageous and it was un-small D Democratic and it made no mark in the polls whatsoever. That sort of process stuff just does not sort of get on persuadable voters' radar screen. And the reality is that if you weren't already furious with the Republican legislature after the first 7.5 years of it, what happened this week wasn't going to put you over the top. So I hate to say it, because certainly what they do is wrong and contrary to democracy and all that kind of thing. But they've gotten away with doing it for 7.5 years, so why wouldn't they keep on doing it?
Well, I gave it a shot. Publicpolicypolling.com is the website if you want more information. And again, find them on Twitter at ppppolls.com. Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.